south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Well, Happy New Year, everybody. This show goes up on January 1st, 2017. I don't know about you, but it always takes me at least a month to start writing 2017 on things. And nope, it's not Alzheimer's unless that kicks in when you're 7 years old, because that's how far back I remember writing the wrong year. It's just traditional with me. It takes me a month at least to get it straight. Anyway, we made it. We're at 2017, and so many bright, even brilliant people I know who've come down and made Latin America part of their plan B predict or believe this is the year that Titanic-like event happens up in the Big Brother first world, resulting in repercussions in the four corners of the earth. Well, we'll see. What I mean is, we'll see things crumble all right from a nice safe distance here in Latin America. But you knew that already, right? That said, here's some late-breaking news out of Argentina, a country I don't recommend for expats and their plan B unless you've got a lot of money and don't mind a Latin version of Big Brother encroaching on your freedom. Okay, so here's today's article coming out of the South American news services. It starts, in a late session on Friday, December 23rd, in fact, the very last session of the year, the governments of Argentina and the United States signed a very extensive tax information exchange agreement that seeks to combat tax evasion and promote transparency from both the states and Argentina. Yeah, right. Have you ever heard such BS? Then it says, U.S. Treasury Secretary Jacob L. Lew said in a statement, this agreement paves the way for reinsertion of Argentina into the world economy and constitutes a major new step forward in the relationship between the U.S. and Argentina. All right, it's me, Johnny, again. Can't help myself. That statement right there makes me want to stay as far away from Argentina as possible. So you're thinking, so what's new about this with FATCA and GATCA and all the mandatory reporting of your private bank accounts to the IRS and the U.S. Treasury? Well, get this. The article says, 3 months ago, large technical teams from the Ministry of Finance in Argentina and a large team of U.S. IRS and Treasury Department officials spent weeks working out a comprehensive information exchange deal. This deal actually goes beyond FATCA and GATCA. Then it explains, AFIP, the Argentine tax authorities, will now have a valuable tool in the U.S. to detect within the territory of the United States any and all overt and hidden, what they call undeclared assets that rightfully belong in Argentina. Then it says, from the date this agreement takes effect, January 1st, agents in the administrative realm of either nation, Argentina or the U.S., can now, without the need for any judicial interference or action, get any and all information from the other nation's tax authority, allowing them to monitor their taxpayers and eventually bring about repayment, along with penalties and sanctions, of lost tax revenues, according to the Ministry of Finance in Argentina. Argentine tax officials said that this agreement is in addition to the recently signed agreements with the tax authorities from 45 other nations, to make it increasingly difficult for Argentinians to keep any assets abroad. In addition, Argentine tax sources say, now for the first time it's possible that with a simple online search, they could locate the foreign assets of any Argentine citizen or legal resident. Let me repeat that. It says it includes legal residents too. And that means, the article says, if any individual in question has bank accounts, shares, bonds, real estate, or any type of asset class in his or her name located in the U.S. or any of the 45 other countries who signed the agreement, those assets can immediately be frozen without a court order. The agreements between these countries, specifically the United States, is all part of an ambitious ongoing program that seeks to recover the $30 to $50 billion held in secret by Argentinos abroad. Or so say the corrupt, dunderheaded Argentine tax authorities. Okay, now that we all know that, I wonder what Doug Casey is thinking right now. You know, he's the guy with that big, expensive real estate development in Argentina that really is quite nice and very expensive and exclusive. And if you get Doug Casey's newsletters, which I do, I like them a lot. They're very good. You'll see he promotes it with seminars a couple times a year to try to get you to come down and buy into it. I really think he's backing the wrong horse on that one, but he's right about so many other things. Hey, nobody bats 1,000. And like my dad used to say, 1,000? Hell, nobody bats 500. Then again, if you've got tons of money, you can live practically anywhere you want in the world, right? By the way, I believe lots start around $300,000 or more. That's just a lot. Now, Doug Casey admits the Argentine government's very corrupt, but he says it doesn't matter about the government. We live how we live, the way we like to. They leave us alone. So they leave you alone, huh? Well, you have bought into that Argentine property deal. You just keep telling yourself that. And now for something completely different. A few years back, I did a show about ayahuasca. You know, that foul-tasting potion you take, given to you by a shaman, or at least a guy who says he's a shaman and he's got the right clothes. By the way, never trust a shaman who smells like he's wearing first world cologne. Nope, a real shaman would never wear even Brute or Old Spice. He's got to be, well, kind of rank, like he's been out in the bush for a couple of weeks. In the dry season. You know, earthy smelling, bordering on the repulsive. However, all shamans, no matter how traditional, have a new accessory. The cell phone. Doesn't quite seem right, does it? Anyway, if you go into the Expat File archives and track down that show, you can follow along with me on my little journey into the ayahuasca head trip. Now, you know, because my shows are out in the ether forever and are downloadable at any time, often people send me emails and ask questions about shows that I did years ago. I'm still getting emails about that ayahuasca show. Just got one today. Got a few emails last week on the subject, too. Now, this particular one is from a longtime listener who prefers to remain anonymous, and he says, Johnny, here's an article link I'm going to give you from Drudge today. It's all about the hallucinogenic plant ayahuasca and how it's becoming more and more popular up in the States. You know, Johnny, it could be a good business opportunity south of the border. What do you think? Then there's this email from Lenny. He says, Johnny, I'm reading more and more articles and hearing more and more reports that people are trying that ayahuasca stuff up here in the States. In fact, I was at a party the other week with some of my old sports buddies and friends from college, and the subject came up, and it wasn't the first time. So here we are, all of us in our late 30s, thinking, wouldn't it be cool for all of us to take a weekend off and go up in the mountains or to Sedona or wherever they serve that stuff up and have ourselves a little hallucinogenic retreat? You know, kind of like that old famous movie from the 80s, The Big Chill. Hey, Johnny, believe me, that's not the first time we talked about getting together and doing that. We've done the fishing trips, the hunting trips, the canoeing, the whitewater rafting, the tailgate parties at the playoff games. You name it, we've done it. Yes, Johnny, our little group of 15 to 20 people, we've done Hawaii and Vegas and Carnival cruises. Having done all that, what's next? Ayahuasca, of course. Funny enough, even our wives reluctantly agreed. No, I don't mean they were into doing the ayahuasca, but they said they'd tag along with us just to watch and laugh as we stumble around and vomit and stuff. Then, he says, the only thing is I still believe ayahuasca is illegal here in the States, but since when has that ever stopped anyone? Which makes it all the more mysterious and interesting, don't you think? And of course, I know, according to some Mayan and Inca and Aztec, whatever, ritualistic religions, in that case, it is legal, at least I think it is. And I know people are always talking about doing it south of the border. Question is, how do you hook up a trip like that? Do they have what you might call ayahuasca charter planes flying out of the big cities and states to Peru, Colombia, Panama, Ecuador, wherever? I mean, it seems to be the up-and-coming, all-natural, mind-expanding thing to do. People are talking about it at parties and such, and when you find someone who's actually done it, shortly there's a little buzz in the room and everybody's gathered around to hear the stories. People seem scared to try it, yet they're jealous of people who did. Talk about crazy weird, huh? My question, Johnny, do you have an update or any more info on that? What's the scoop? Keep on keeping on, Johnny. Longtime listener, Donnie. All right, Donnie, we'll get to that. But first, there's this email from last week. It starts, Johnny, I think I've tried every drug in the universe. Of course, that was way back when in my college days. Then I straightened up, hit the business world, had myself a nice, successful life. Now I'm ready to jump off the treadmill and have some fun again. Though in moderation, not to extremes like the old days. Anyway, way back when I was doing the magic shrooms and all that, there was really no such thing as shamans and ayahuasca. Not in the States, anyway. But you know, recently I've been reading a lot about that. started reading all I can and listening to podcasts from the guru of all psychedelic gurus, a guy named Terence McKenna. If you recall, he's the guy that went down to South America and hung out with the shamans for a couple of years, got the secret ayahuasca recipe out of them, though they didn't want to give it up so easily to the white man, and you can understand that, I guess. Which brings me to the point of my little missive here. I understand there isn't just one concoction of ayahuasca, that there are a number of different natural roots and chemicals they mix up depending which country and which shaman you're dealing with. Which is why I don't quite trust these people who put on these so-called weekend Holiday Inn ayahuasca retreat deals up in the States. By the way, did you know you can go on the internet and actually order this stuff and mix it yourself? Apparently, the individual ingredients aren't illegal. It's when it's all mixed up into the concoction that it's illegal, in the States anyway. I don't know. I haven't tried. I'm just gathering all the information I can. Bottom line, I'm confused about all of it. I really like to try ayahuasca, not because of the drug and hallucinogenic effects. I'm talking about its main purpose, to really de-stress you, calm you down, and give you a different, smoother outlook on life. One guy I talked to said it best. It unwinds the knots and tangles that have accumulated in your brain. Sounds good to me, and trying it once won't hurt, I think. So now that it's kind of an underground rage here in the States, what's happening with ayahuasca in Latin America? Is everybody jumping on the bandwagon down there too? And most importantly, can the shamans or whoever's administering this stuff and cooking it up be trusted? Are there, you know, bad trips and stuff like in the old LSD days? I know, Johnny, a lot of questions and maybe not a lot of answers. Just thought I'd throw that out at you. By the way, missed out on your upcoming seminar. Me and the wife will be at the next one, for sure. Signed, Rufus. Rufus, huh? I doubt that's his real name. What mother names her kid Rufus? Unless she thinks he's going to grow up and make rap records, or more likely grow up to have a prison record, huh? Same difference. Okay, that said, talking about ayahuasca, DMT and all that, yep, I tried it once. With a real rank shaman and a couple of his scruffy assistants. And yes, you get sick in one orifice or another. But as far as it being ever so popular here in Latin America, well, in a word, it's not. Actually, that's two words. Anyway, I've met tons and tons of locals and gringos, and I still haven't met very many at all who've tried it. Even though it's readily enough available down here. For example, if someone contacted me and wanted to go on a ayahuasca journey, I know exactly who to hook them up with and what internet link to give them, and they could come down, hook up with one of these guys, and go to a nice little weekend retreat and, you know, dive right into the astral plane, so to speak. So the answer to the question, is it very popular down here? I'd have to say no. But there is a certain amount of demand, or the shamans wouldn't be hanging around advertising it. And it's not like, you know, they're holding up signs or passing out business cards. It's a very low-key kind of thing, and no one's making a killing out of it. And in fact, I don't think anybody's even making a living, except a handful of very, very dedicated ones. It's just something, you know, that's been around for thousands of years, and it's kind of a tradition with certain native tribes and religious groups. However, one thing I do know, there are lots of fake shamans up there in the States. And what our emailer says is true. The various shamans down here in Central and South America, they mix up their own brews, and they're all just a little bit different. So it's not like there's one solid, very proportional, tried and true formula. They're all kind of like mom and pop craft beer experts, so to speak. Only their product has a much more massive kick. And the hangover, well, let's not go there. By the way, if there's one thing I really hated about the experience myself, besides the fact that, like I said, you have a couple of loose orifices, hopefully just one, is that they put you in a circle while they're doing the ceremony and they get you to take your shirt off. The shamans will insist on that. Even the ladies, you know, they'll strip down to their bras, which is a little bit unusual, while the shamans are dancing and the incense is burning and they're, you know, creating this mystical type atmosphere by candlelight, of course. Then suddenly one of the shamans takes a big mouthful of some stuff, gargles with it a bit, and next thing you know, he's got a big lung full of air and he blows it out of his mouth in a spray all over you. And remember, your shirt's off. And I'll tell you, for me anyway, that was the most revolting development in the whole process. And luckily, maybe unluckily, he did that as a prelude to you drinking that foul ayahuasca brew. So what he was spraying out of his mouth at you was some kind of alcoholic beverage, tequila, mezcal, some kind of secret shaman recipe, diet Mountain Dew, who knows? Smelled like alcohol anyway. So get ready for that unique experience. Ugh. Anyway, for the guy who emailed me talking about rounding up his bored yuppie buddies and their wives and taking them on a happy-go-lucky weekend ayahuasca retreat, I'd say it's imminently possible to put that kind of thing together. Just shoot me an email and I'll give you a couple of leads and links. And you know, the emailer is right. They are doing those things kind of on the sly up in the States and Canada, even in such mundane places as Holiday Inns and Budgetels near Cleveland. Or was it Indianapolis? Could have been Cincinnati. In fact, I got an email not so long ago from a person who said he saw an ad in the local college newspaper. A bona fide shaman was coming through, offering a weekend spiritual enlightenment course. They didn't actually mention ayahuasca in the ad, but when he phoned them up, they did. So yeah, I guess it sounds like fun, you know, shipping 15 or 20 of your closest buddies and their wives to a real 100% shaman retreat site here in Latin America. In fact, I think it's 100 times cooler than a whitewater rafting trip. So I guess that's what I'm missing from not being up in the States. Those buddy-buddy guys and wives weekend trips, huh? Yeah, I know what you mean. The Napa Valley wine crawl, the dude ranch, the old-timers baseball camp, the Bob Barker celebrity cruises. Yep, hardworking young adults are always looking for that escape valve when they get that vacation. I know how it is. I've got some brothers and sisters who are exactly on that trajectory, working for the weekend and all that. But that idea of a chartered jet ayahuasca weekend, man, you know, that could be a viable business. And to make it happen, all you'd have to do is hook up with one of the shamans down here who does it on a regular basis and hook up with a travel agency up north, and you could have chartered ayahuasca getaway weekends. How about that? Hey, you know, there are so many opportunities down here. You just have to get your boots on the ground and check them out. However, that's not to say a certain percentage of gringos who do come down trying to make their mark don't catch the wave or have some bad luck and end up going back. Some of the bad luck stories are predictable. They got scammed, usually on the gringo tourist trail, by other gringos, or got hooked up with a bad lawyer, or they get hooked up with a psycho conjugal partner. Talked about that in the last show. In fact, anything can happen. You're the captain of your own ship, and you direct your own life. So once you get down here, though, you've always got the gringo advantage going for you, and you'll see it in action all the time, especially off the tourist trail. There are still some people that just can't make it work. Or maybe they really can, but they just ran out of time, patience, or money. And you know, one time someone asked me, what are the percentages, you know, out of, let's say, 10 people come down, how many can stick it out and make it work? And my answer, well, it all depends on the type of person you are and what your basic needs are, too. I mean, if you come from backpacker stock and you don't mind roughing it for a while and your wants are few and you can do without luxury, well, you can work for a call center or work as an English teacher down here and be a perpetually happy camper. So, for example, if you're used to living on $30,000 or $35,000 a year in the States, you can easily live exactly like that for $10,000 or $15,000 a year here. And a lot depends if you're single, married, or bringing the kids and grandma and Aunt Tootie along, too. And if you got a family and a nice nest egg that can last you a couple of years at least, there's not that heavy pressure to find something to do and make some money right away. And I'll tell you, the people that almost never go back are people who come down on a basic Social Security check or a small pension. Because they know when they come down here, they could never live that kind of life if they were back up in the States. In other words, the cat food they buy down here is actually for the cat. In fact, I'm always shocked when people tell me what things really cost these days up in the States. For example, the other day I was telling someone that I pay around $150 a year for third-party liability insurance on my car. And that includes the AAA type of service that covers everything. You run out of gas, you get a flat tire, your headlight's out, you just call them, they come over, they take care of you, and that's part of the policy. Yep, I said $150 a year, but you have to shop around. Because, you know, I run into a lot of expats on the gringo tourist trail or slightly on the trail who pay twice that and don't realize they can get it for half because they just don't know how to shop around. Their Spanish sucks and they confide in other gringos who are in the same boat. Though in the greater scheme of things, it's still a great deal at twice the price. Now, you know, over the years I've met a lot of gringos who are pretty tight. Many of them are backpackers. I mean, that's how they started out in the first place. They didn't have a lot of money. They wanted to travel, and backpackers are known for squeezing a buck till it bleeds, which is why most restaurants, and especially the waiters and waitresses, don't like backpackers much. But you know, I've run into some people who are obsessed with saving money too, and they get pissed off if they buy something or check into a hotel and find out someone else got it cheaper. And that will happen, especially in hotels, because you know, there's a dozen ways to book a place. Person to person, internet, friends, prepaid discounts, coupons even. And sometimes prices in the same hotels vary by 50%. For example, I know of a fantastic group of hotels, kind of a chain in Latin America. If you just walk in and want a room, it's something like $110 a night. $90 if you book it on the internet. But that same chain sells a little booklet of 5 coupons for $300, which makes it $60 a night, double occupancy, breakfast included, tax included. It's rarely publicized and very few Latins know about it. So how's a wandering, clueless gringo supposed to know? So what if you were a walk-in and you paid $110 and the next day you're sitting at the pool shooting a breeze with someone and you start discussing hotels and rates and he says, well, I only paid $60. Are you going to get pissed off and go to the management? Is that going to ruin your vacation? Well, maybe if you're overpaying by $50 a day, you will have a little talk with the manager. Who knows? So at what point do you get irritated? I know some cheapskate gringos who get pissed off if they discover they paid a few more nickels than they had to. Most times, guys like that aren't fun to be around, you know? But hey, that's life. Like my mother once said, Johnny, someday you'll buy 10 bags of groceries, you'll get home and find out you only have 9. Yep, the bagger screwed up and someone got one of yours. She said, don't get mad, don't get even. Someday you'll go shopping, you'll buy 10 bags, you'll get them home, and there'll be 11. Yep, in time, the law of averages prevails. Now, lately I've been asking freshly arrived gringos what they've been paying for their car insurance up in the States, and I get a number around $400 to $500 a year for liability coverage. Then the AAA coverage would be extra. Now, if you want full coverage down here in Latin America, like almost everyone has up in the States, at least people who are on payments, they make you do that, right? If you're on payments down here, too, they'll add that full coverage insurance premium into your payment in case you crack it up or it gets stolen. Only makes sense, right? Now, I just spoke to someone down here who's got a 2014 Toyota RAV, you know, a small SUV, and he pays around $65 a month for comprehensive insurance. Around $900 a year, that's theft, collision, the whole works. So maybe those are first world prices. Maybe they're not. I don't know. What do you pay? Send me an email. All I know is that insurance quotes are all over the place in the States and down here too, so you have to shop around. In fact, one gringo lady just came down recently and she told me that up in the States now, they're checking your credit score when you apply for car insurance. Turns out there are some studies that show that people who have bad credit ratings drive badly too. But it gets worse. Now with Google Earth and all that GPS stuff people have in their cars, Google's accumulating the goods on you. Of course, the NSA has been doing that all along, but they don't know how to monetize it like Google. Anyway, those creeps at Google will know when you're speeding, run a yellow or red light, make an illegal turn, park in an unauthorized zone, even cross a double center line. And of course, insurance companies will love that information. They'll buy it from Google, and then when you go for insurance, they'll jack your rates up or cut you off completely. Man, am I glad I don't live in Chicago anymore or Cleveland. By the way, in Latin America, there are no credit scores. I know I'm skipping around a lot today, but what else is new? Catching up on some odds and ends here. Speaking of money-making ideas for gringos, once they get down here in boots on the ground, what do you think are the most popular business ideas gringos up in the States have when they think about making money here in Latin America? No, I'm not talking about teaching English or working at a call center. Those aren't business ideas. Those are regular jobs. Well, you long-term listeners probably know the top two on the list. That would be starting your own bed and breakfast or hotel. That neck and neck with opening your own restaurant. And both, I have to tell you, are not very sound ideas because everyone's thought of it. And the competition is fierce. However, these days, if you have an apartment or a house, you can make use of the Airbnb concept. A lot of gringos are doing that and it's working. But then again, who knows how long that's going to last when the next shoe falls up in the first world and people just don't have enough money to travel anymore. And you know what? One very brilliant gringo told me recently, there'll be a huge resurgence of backpackers just like in the 60s. Everybody will still go on vacation. They need to get that out of their system, but they'll go very low budget. Sounds reasonable, right? But back to the third most common business idea people send me questions about in emails. What do you think it is? It's the subject of how to make money with coffee. Here's what many of them are thinking. I know what I'll do. I'll come down, locate some very good, very cheap coffee, and there's a lot of that down here. This is the land of coffee. Then they say they'll package it up and sell it to all those coffee lovers up in the first world. Everybody knows about Starbucks, and that boutique coffee can go for $15, $20, even $30 a pound. Well, let me tell you, the gringos that came down earlier wrung that idea out a long time ago. Sure, there are some making some money doing the boutique thing, but these days, coffee production is outpacing the growth in consumption. For example, in China, they're on a huge growth curve for drinking coffee, but still, with coffee prices being so high in the last few years, there are many more thousands, even tens of thousands of acres of great volcanic farmland being converted to coffee plantations as we speak. So where you once had corn, cows, and chickens, now you have coffee. So if you think you're going to come down here and buy fantastic coffee for $3 or $4 or even $5 a pound, well, you can do that all day long. You'll also find gourmet, high-quality coffee for around $7 and $8 a pound if you go on the internet or even check in some of the big food and gourmet food outlets up in the States. For example, longtime listener Dave sent me a couple of photos of Guatemalan coffee he found in his own backyard up in the States for something like $7 or $8 for 12 ounces at Trader Joe's. I mean, come on, how are you going to compete with that? Even if you could get it down here for $2 or $3 a pound, then you got to pay the shipping, import tax, the storage. You got to market it, have a staff, salespeople. Of course, everyone could see it would work out if you could sell it for $15 a pound or more. But when you're competing with people who are already selling it for $8 or $9 a pound, you'll need a gimmick or forget it. All right, we're getting towards the end of the show now. I'd like to remind you once again that if you want to get that Plan B started and you really have to get on it, the clock's ticking and time's a-wasting. In fact, the way many bright people are seeing it, you've got about 3 choices to make right now. Sit on that sofa channel surfing, munching those Doritos. In other words, go down with the ship. Or number 2, buy some water jugs, a couple pallets of ammo, and ready-to-eat meals. Sit in your basement and flick on that diesel generator when the lights go out. Or you can get that Plan B going and vote with your feet, which comes highly recommended by people with very big brains, by the way. Nope, I'm not including myself in that chorus. I just happened to get very lucky a long time ago. Kind of stumbled into Latin America by accident. Anyway, if you're contemplating that Plan B, and you really should, and you haven't got any boots on the ground off the Gringo tourist trail yet, one of the very best ideas for getting that plan underway from the comfort of your own home up there is to check out my Expat Essentials course. Just go to www.expatplanb.com, check out the first couple of free videos, and you'll see exactly what I mean. That's www.expatplanb.com. So what's so special about it? Well, for one thing, in doing so, you'll get the answers to the right questions, which in turn will give you that little extra boost of confidence to really get you rolling with it.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my 3 videos. See ya. Nos vemos.